All right, welcome to our discussion of the In Defense of Yitzchak. Parshat Toldot is all about Yitzchak. It's the only parsha that where Yitzchak is really the centerpiece of the parsha. Last week, it was all about Yitzchak, but it was things that Avraham did for Yitzchak, to Yitzchak, and the week before that as well, the binding of Isaac, the bris of Isaac. So there's a lot of things that happened before, but this week is where Isaac is the star of the show. This week, and of course, Yaakov begins to take over as well, Rivka, but he's really the star of the show. So we want to understand in defense of Yitzchak. Now, very often it's said that, you hear this a lot, that Yitzchak is not really as good as the other Avos. People say to me, we don't really know much about Yitzchak, do we? And so I don't want to kind of challenge that, really. We don't know that much about Yitzchak. Let's think about that a little deeper. And people say, he's not quite like the other ones. He just sort of a rerun, So I'd like to examine that notion that somehow Yitzchak is lesser than Avraham, lesser than Yaakov, and more importantly, what is his role and what is the image of Yitzchak, as they say in Hebrew, Lidmuto shel Yitzchak Avinu. We want to understand the image of Yaakov Avinu. So let's begin as usual at the beginning, and we'll get started and take a look at some of the sources about this question. Okay. In the defense, so if everybody's getting into a basketball game or anything, defense is always important. So we want to defend that Isaac, and let's see what we have to say. But first, before we defend him, we want to know what we're defending him from. So we need to make the case against. So the prosecution. Number one, he loved Esav. He said, he loved Esav. Why? Ki tzayid b'fiv, because he enticed him with his mouth, whether like Rashi, that he tricked him, told him what a pious person he was. He was concerned about the tithing of salt, whether how much salt should you take, or whether that he liked game. He liked to eat venison, and it was very tasty. He was a good hunter. And it's a bit of a critique. I mean, Yitzchak is deciding which son he likes based on who provides good hunting meat. Very strange. And the fact that he would love Esav, I mean, how could you love someone? That I hate those who hate God. If Esav is a wicked man, as the rabbis certainly have it, perhaps the text suggests something along those lines. You don't love the wicked. Maybe your son, okay, but he seemed to love him more than Yaakov. So, what's going on? Tried to bless Esau.
Can I ask the question quickly? Somebody told me somewhere that Esau was such a good hunter that he could shecht an animal with an arrow.
Right. So the question is, if he provided meat for Yitzchak, and if we say that Avraham kept all the mitzvahs, and we assume that Yitzchak also kept all the mitzvahs, then wasn't the hunt, the game, wasn't it not kosher? So the answer would have to be that when he drew his arrow, it would go straight across the neck the way it's supposed to go. But yeah, it is possible. Okay, now,
okay.
Zohar, in fact, makes some kind of a condemnation against Yitzchak for this very reason. When Isaac became elderly, his eyes dimmed. Why? Anybody who loves the wicked, his eyes should be dim. He's blind. Vo Rabbi Yitzchak. Yitzchak has to do with Gevura, Gevura has to do with light. Light is not clear. He can't see. He doesn't have a good vision. What is his business? He loves the wicked. So the prosecution is very clear. There's this problem with this Yitzchak who loves the wrong person. And he seems to love even this wicked Esav. So there's certainly some work to be done tonight to defend from this. Also, it's interesting that you never find that God says, Yitzchak, Yitzchak, Ayomid, and he says, here I am. All the other, Avraham, Yaakov, Moshe, Hashem says, Moshe, Moshe, Yaakov, Yaakov. But what happened? But Avraham, Avraham. But why doesn't he say Yitzchak, Yitzchak? So the Zohar also comes to attack. I guess the Zohar is part of the prosecution. Moshe, Moshe, Yaakov, chutz mi Yitzchak. Doesn't say Yitzchak, Yitzchak. Says, he wasn't really part of this world. He was really part of a different world. So it's not anything bad, but But there's an idea that, you know, he wasn't really part of this world anymore. He was almost dead. So somehow he doesn't get a Yitzchak Yitzchak. But the very idea that there's no Yitzchak Yitzchak, there's a very loving expression. God says, hey, Avraham, Avraham, Moshe, Moshe. He doesn't say that about Isaac. So also something in the prosecution. So before we get to the defense, we need to understand, what do we know about him? Because as a part of the argument against him is, you know, there's hardly anything about him. Well, have you read Parsha Toldot? But that's what people say. They don't know anything about him. Every time we tell them what more about him, they say, oh, we still don't know anything. Let's take a look at what do we know. I mentioned the Abraham stories. Of course, we should mention his birth. You know, how he was born. It was something funny, something with laughter. Mentioned the other week, thought from Rabbi Soloveitchik, that he's called Yitzchak because when you think about the idea that a woman of 90 years old and a man of 100 years old have children, you laugh. It's like Jewish history. The Jews are going to rise up after 2,000 years. You laugh. So this is that's also part of the story of Isaac. He had a Prius. He was born. He led through laughter, through prophecy. He was separated from his brother, who was no good, the Ishmael, and all that. But then the binding of Isaac is clearly a story that involves Isaac, although we always emphasize Abraham as being tested. Yitzchak was maybe forced to be part of it, although it says he walked along with his father. The rabbis interpret that he asked his father to tie him up so he wouldn't flinch. And also the story of finding Isaac a bride is really all about Isaac, but it's really not about Isaac because Isaac doesn't go to find himself a bride. He only appears at the end of the story when Rivka comes home. And that is one major occurrence. He appears in the field. So rabbis say he was praying, although later we see that he enjoys Esav, who's a man of the field, and we find Isaac wandering in the field, and we find him planting. So he's more of an agricultural land of Israel kind of a guy. He loves Rivka. We don't find this. The expression is not found with Avraham. It's not found with Leah. It is found with Yaakov, but it's more, Yaakov is more an infatuation, I would say, with Rivka, with Rachel. But here, after he's married, he still loves her. Oh, that's a big deal. After he's married, he married her and he loved her. So there's something very special, although the Netziv says that they did not have a great relationship. Rivka was afraid of Yitzchak. He was overly awesome. And he loves Esav. God appears to him and makes a promise. His wife is almost abducted and he gets out of it. So God appeared to Avraham, God appeared to Yitzchak. Abraham's wife was almost abducted. So was Rivka. He planted and it was blessed 100-fold. He planted. He is the first forefather who planted. You say, what did he do? He didn't do anything. He planted. Oh, yeah, so what? Tell me something interesting. No, that is interesting. Why? Avraham's wandering around with his sheep. But Yitzchak does have sheep. Because that's why he digs the wells to have water for sheep. But he also planted. He actually grew something in Israel. The early Zionists understood this, that when you come to Israel, you want to be part of the land. You got to have Yadinu Berigveg Matai. You have your hands in the clumps of the dirt of Israel. Yitzchak is the only forefather who's got his hands in the clumps. He planted. He was successful. Planting is something you do. You're a farmer when you really live there. He really lived in Israel, something he did. The list goes on. The parsha has a lot of different little mini episodes. He dug wells that his father had dug. So here's a sort of rerun kind of an idea. If you know Charlie Brown, the idea of rerun, that he dug some wells that his father had dug. He digs three wells and the last one succeeds, which Ramban says is a forerunner of Jewish history. We had the first temple, second temple, the third temple will be successful. God appears again to bless him. So you may not realize it, but God appears twice to him. In the response to the second time, he builds an altar like Abraham used to build. So it's a lot of rerun things, but he does the good things that Abraham did. He spread the word about God. He called out in the name of God. Avimelech begs him to make a breach. So that's good. I mean, well, in three wells, he got into trouble. The locals didn't like him. Avraham was very well liked. Yaakov, hard to say. But Yitzchak was honored at the end of the parsha when Avimelech begs him to make a breach of a covenant. But at the beginning, he was sort of thrown out. And they had a lot of conflict about the wells. So he sort of reminds us of Jewish history. the idea that Jews will be expelled, Jews will have to go from one place to the other, Jews will get into conflict with those who claim the land is theirs. It's even, the Radak says, it's a harbinger of the notion that the land of the Philistines is not, is, the Jews won't be so successful in the Philistine area, both in the days of David, certainly Saul, and in the days of the Gaza Strip, where we had settlements there. We're not so successful there. We got kicked out. But one day we'll be able to return. And Avimelech begs him to make a covenant. So all the important people come to him with the chief general and the king of the Philistines, and they ask him to make a covenant. He's got a lot of honor. Avraham was honored. Yitzchak's also honored. Yaakov, not as much. But he's honored by the locals. He found water again in Beersheba. He was an expert in that. And they called Beersheba because of him. The city of Beersheba is named after him, supposedly. I mean, Yaakov, Avraham was already in Beersheba, but to some degree it describes Beersheba being attributed to him. He didn't like Esau's wives. Now, he started off by saying that the prosecution is that why does he love Esau? He doesn't love Esau so much. I mean, he finds his wives very objectionable. Sometimes you love your son so much, but then he marries somebody you don't like and you can't stand it. You can't stand the wives, and you still love your son, but you're upset about the wives. So he and Rivka were on the same page. They both had a bad spirit about these people that he had married. Now, and then the famous story was, of course, just telling you very briefly that he blessed Yaakov by mistake, right? When Yaakov tricked him. And then he blesses Yaakov with a blessing of Avraham. He gives him the blessing of Avraham. So it's not clear that he ever wanted to give the blessing of Avraham to Esav. But when he knows who he's talking to, he gives Yaakov the blessing of Abraham and tells him not to marry a Canaanite wife. So it's only Yaakov who's told not to marry a Canaanite wife. Esav overhears that, but Esav is married to Canaanite wives, Hittite wives, and Esav was not commanded. Yitzchak did command Yaakov to follow the Abrahamic code, don't marry a Canaanite wife, and he gives him the blessing of Abraham. And finally, in defense, he lives the longest of all the patriarchs. If he's so bad, if he's so blah, if he's so vanilla, if he's so parv, if he's so just a transitional figure, some would say, then why does he live longer than anybody else? Avraham, 175, it's close, but no cigar. And Yaakov, much less, 147. Of course, Yaakov tells us that his life is so miserable, he can't, you know, he was suffering for so many years from the loss of his son. He didn't live as long, but he does live, Yitzchak does live the longest. So you kind of wonder, maybe that's the ultimate. He lives the longest of all. So there's some intimation that he is the most special, not the least special.
Hey, Rabbi.
Them's the facts. Yes, doctor.
I was just going to ask, you know, one of the things that I always remember about Methuselah is that the only thing the Bible says about him is that he lived a long life. Is that necessarily, and I'm just thinking about it in juxtaposition of what you're saying now, is there anything to that?
You want to claim that the living a long, if you, it's even worse, more damning. It's part of the prosecution. If you live a long life, but you don't have that much to show for it, then it's even worse. Right.
Exactly.
Right. So, okay. Yeah. So it's an argument. It's an argument. Very good. But as I showed, I mean, God appeared to him twice. He built an altar. He spread the word of God. He loved his wife. He prayed in the field. So, it's not as if he didn't do anything. He achieved great things in the land of Israel. He found water. Even in more desert-like parts of Israel, he found water, he planted, he was successful. So, you know, maybe you say he did achieve a lot. He guided his son. And but yes.
He maybe had both, the long life and attributes.
Right, I mean, that's the question, right. So we're trying to decide, did he achieve a lot? So if you assume he didn't, and then you say he lived a long time, then that would be very damning. Okay, good. Now, that was just the facts. In other words, we could argue this way, that way. We have to know, what did he actually do? So those are the things he did. Now, the defense. Number one, his name was never changed. If we compare him to the other forefathers, Avram's name was changed from Avram. Yaakov's name was changed to Israel, although he retained Yaakov to some degree. Yitzchak's name was made by God, and it was never changed. So the Jerusalem Talmud says, why not? Why does Avram, Yaakov, they change their name? Shmo shel Yitzchak, lo nishtana. The name of Isaac was never changed. Because the answer is that their parents gave them that name, so God changed it. Why should God change his name? He already called him Yitzchak. How could God change his name? God gave him the name. So he's very special that his name was from God. So it's very interesting. So on the one hand, you know, he didn't change. He just was what he was. It is what it is, you know. But on the other hand, no, he's special. God gave him that name. God envisioned Yitzchak Yikarel Chazar. It's Yitzchak through which you, Avraham, will have continuity. Yitzchak is the key man. It's all about Yitzchak. And the name was Yitzchak. And God said so. And he never changed it. He was through and through. He was the same man all the way through. Also, Isaac prayed for his wife. So you'd say, of course he prayed for his wife. Anybody would pray for their wife. Really? When did Avraham pray for his wife? I'm afraid not. I'm sure he did, but the text does not record per se that Avraham prayed for his wife. When they had problems, they went to the concubines. Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, a great German rabbi in the 19th century, he wasn't only praying for himself that he should have sons. He also prayed that those children should specifically be from this righteous woman because she was chosen from God. Because again, the servant Eliezer said that it must be from God because he was sent on a mission to Mesopotamia and he shows up there and boom, he happens to land on the family of Rivka and she happens to be so wonderful and he finds her. So it's got to be God ordained it. He didn't want to do what his father did to take a concubine or to take another wife. He didn't want to do that. So he prayed for his wife. Yaakov did not pray for his wife. He took concubines. He used mandrakes. Now, there's a midrash that Rachel complains. She says, why don't you pray for me like your father prayed? But that we don't find that he prayed. The women themselves pray. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Rachel prays, may God give me another child. But the patriarchs don't. If you want to compare him to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we're not comparing him to Rachel. We're comparing him to Avraham. And he prayed he specifically prayed, and it's something special about the Yitzchak-Rivka connection. It's the only monogamous relationship of all the patriarchs. Very interesting. Only monogamous relationship of all the patriarchs. I don't know, maybe Aaron, if you want to include Aaron. I'm not sure if he may have been monogamous, but this is a very special relationship. She's special, Rivka. The marriage was from God. And he's special. And it just has to be those two. So it's very interesting. Why not marry another wife, a concubine? After all, everybody else did it. We'll find out later. Rashi's going to tell us later. Welcome to Elaine Fox. Then if we want to know anything about Yitzchak, we need this first verse in this week's Parsha. This is the history of the generations of Isaac. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. Again, these are the generations of Isaac. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. These are the generations of Isaac. The translation is not good. These are the generations of Isaac, son of Abraham. Let me change that. These are the generations of Isaac, son of Abraham. Son of Abraham, Avraham gave birth to Isaac. If he's the son of Abraham, of course. So what's the idea? So Yosef Bechorshor says as follows. He says, Yitzchak told Oto, Yitzchak is his child, his seed, his memale makom. He takes his place. As it says, God said to Abraham, through Isaac, that will be considered your seed. But the other children of Avraham, they're not considered his seed. So, but you might argue that he's the one who takes the place. What is Yitzchak? he is simply a son of Abraham. Now, is that in defense of Yitzchak or prosecution? Some who diminish the role of Yitzchak would say, this is a perfect verse. It says, what is Yitzchak? Hey, he's just a continuity from his father. He didn't do much. He was just, you know, the glue that connects Avram to Yaakov. Of course, you could also read this verse to mean that, no, you know who Yitzchak was? He was the son of Avram. He was just like Avram. It was amazing how he was just like Avram. And it's an amazing thing. Some people pointed out, I think Rabbi Lichtenstein may have pointed this out, that it's a big job to be continuity. This business, we throw this on the children. Oh, you have to have Jewish continuity. You have to marry Jews so we can continue the Jewish people. It's a big burden to throw on someone. And especially if there's nobody else. If you're the only one, if you're the Holocaust survivor, the only one in the whole family, and it's your responsibility to continue our family. We lost 14 people in the war. It's a big responsibility. So to say that the Jewish people are just being established and you're the first one, you better be like a good rerun, a good photocopy of the first one, because we're trying to establish some continuity here. So you know what Yitzchak was? He's a perfect son of his father. He was a continuity. And you could argue that is a big deal. Don't tell me that's nothing. He's just a rerun. No. He achieved what he was supposed to achieve. He kept the continuity of the Jewish family. Innovation was for later. That's Yaakov. But now we just have to have continuity. We'll see another view in a moment, but that's one view. If you look at the solutions that were used for barrenness, Avraham took Hagar, Jacob took mandrakes and concubines. It was only Isaac who prayed, as we mentioned before. Now then we ask, you know, did he really like Esav better? So the Rabbi of Provence in around the 1300s, he says, Yaakov, of course he loved Yaakov too. Yaakov, I'm sure he loved Yaakov more than Esav. He only, so, but the verse says he loved Esav because he had game in his mouth. No, that's the point. He only loved him because he had game in his mouth. And it tastes good. He's getting old and, yeah, he didn't know how to hunt anymore. Rivka, however, really liked Yaakov particularly. So he wants to claim that it doesn't mean that he didn't like Yaakov even more. He just had a particular reason why he liked Esav. Otherwise, he didn't like Esav. So that's one possibility in defense. The Netziv has an interesting approach. Well, let's see if we can get the whole theory here. He says, Yitzchak and Rivka did not disagree, says the Netziv, also from the 19th century, but from Lithuania. They both knew that the main thing would be some of Yitzchak's children, not all of them. Yaakov was learning Torah, and it's just that, you know, Yitzchak appreciated Esav, he was enjoying, but Yaakov was so busy learning, he didn't really hang out with him so much. But there's no question that they both knew what the score was. As we said, in the end, the blessing of Abraham was clearly going to Yaakov, there was no question about it. The Netziv goes a step further, we'll see later. Another thing that makes him very special is that he can't go to Egypt. Avram went to Egypt. Yaakov went to Mesopotamia, but not. And Yaakov eventually goes down to Egypt, of course, for the 200 years and the 400 years. But Yitzchak cannot go down to Egypt. Why? Because ata olat tmima in chutz la'aretz kedai lach. God tells him not to go to Egypt. You're special. You're not like Avram. And there's another idea. Yitzchak represents, as we'll see later, as we saw before, the settlement of the land of Israel. What did we say before? He planted. He's the only one who planted in Israel. And therefore, he belongs there all the time. He's the only patriarch who lives there all his life. He doesn't start his life somewhere else like Avram. He doesn't finish his life somewhere else like Yaakov. He's always in the land of Israel. So he represents the Sabra. He represents the generation of David, of Gan Eden, the ideal generation where you're born and you die in Israel. It's your place. You plant, you set roots. So on the other hand, he does sojourn a bit. He's tossed around. So it's not so easy to live in Israel, right? But he lives in Israel. So there's this idea that because he went up on the altar, even though he was never offered, he was still an offering. An offering doesn't go out of Israel. An offering is holy. Holy things don't go out of Israel. So they has to stay in Israel. So we don't call Abraham an offering. We don't call Jacob an offering. He has a special status as an offering. So that's a special thing. I would like to compare. There's a story. The two stories are very similar. Of had his wife Sarah was abducted, and he's always, she's my sister. I don't know her. And Yitzchak did the same thing. He always does the same thing as his father. Oh, she's my sister. And then Avimelech says to Avraham, he says, she's your wife. Why did you tell me it's your sister? So Yitzchak says, well, I was afraid I might die over her. It's not really such an elegant answer, is it? You're afraid you might die? I mean, that you lied because you thought we would kill you? Avraham, however, says, oh, well, she is my sister from my father, but not from my mother. So I was able to marry her, but she's... So Avraham at least gives some sort of answer why it's his sister. But Yitzchak is forced to say, I thought you might kill me. That's why I said it. Ibn Kasbi says, Mama Avraham, Ibn Kasbi, Yosef Ibn Kasbi lives in Provence. I have to double check that. But he might be from Spain. But he was very radical. He's very cynical. So he says, look, Mama Avraham, Lavi Melech Hayoter Dak. Avraham spoke better. It was more eloquent. It was more refined type of thing to say. Well, you know, she's my sister from my mother. Whereas Yitzchak says, oh, I was afraid I would die. Mm-hmm. Although he got this idea from his father, Altkin. Okay.
Why would they choose to kidnap his wife rather than his sister?
If you saw his wife, you would have captured her. He was very beautiful. What, rather than his sister? No. If he said it was his wife, they would kill him and take her. But if he said it was his sister, they'd say, oh, I like your sister. Let's go on a date. And they would take the sister, and he would say, ah, bah, bah. He wouldn't say anything. And then he'd be gone, and they would spare his life.
These are not good people.
They were great people, right? So
they weren't great people.
Also, people say, what did Yitzchak do? He didn't do anything, accomplish anything. Hold on a second. It says he was very successful. He's right, Yitzchak Baritzai. Isaac planted in that particular land. He didn't always live there, but it was a period in his life where he planted over there, and he found that year, not all the time, 100 times what he planted. God blessed him. That's nice. I mean, yeah, Avraham was rich too, but it's not saying it's unique, but he was successful. And don't forget, successful at planting in Israel. Planting in Israel, that's a big deal. He's not nomadic. He's plants. He does have to move around a lot, but fundamentally, he's more of a farmer, which makes him more connected to the land of Israel. Now, there is the element of rerun, but again, it's good to be rerun. If you're trying to establish a nation, then there has to be, right? You want to have a second, you open Carvel ice cream store. You want to have another Carvel ice cream store. The ice cream has to be good in the second store. So the rerun has to be a good rerun. So Yitzchak dug the wells that his father had dug, and he called them the same names that his father did. So part of Yitzchak's accomplishment is that he was good at following, at being a good follower. There's a time for being a follower. Innovation could come later, but right now, he needed to establish the franchise. It tastes and smells just like Avram. Same wells, same names. The Malbim says, what is the meaning of all these wells? He dug this well, they were fighting. He dug that well, they were fighting. Then he dug the other well, and they weren't fighting, and everything was good. So he said it could represent the three temples. What else? The Malbim. Malbim was in 18th century Poland. He called Masav over Yichatam Bakosh Mimadrigal Madriga, Esav Negdam, Asuna Negdam, Siumim Lamata Baolam Tachton. Their arrival from one level to the next, the forefathers were always climbing from one level to the next. And when they brought down the great spiritual bounty from the other world, they dug wells below. They dug deep from, they drew things from above, from the heavens. And the Plishtim thought that he was taking that he was taking from their powers, their spiritual powers, and actually Yitzchak was taking his power from Avraham, and he brought all the blessings back to Avraham, to Yitzchak, which Avraham had pulled down those blessings from heaven. Yitzchak knew how to get to the channels. He knew which channel, which Zoom channel to go on to bring down all the blessings. And so they're he's growing in his spirituality. He keeps finding these reservoirs of spirituality that his father had found. So it's a fanciful and midrashic kind of interpretation, an allegoric interpretation of the wells, but something very significant happened to Avraham when he dug the wells, and to him as well, according to the Malbim. Now, I want to contrast. Avraham makes a covenant with Avimelech. Now, it does say that Yitzchak swore to Avimelech, but he may have played a little trick on him. Let me read that to you. Just go out of the text for a second. Let's read that to you a second. So we have here in Parshat Toldot that Avimelech comes and says, look, you've been very successful. We'd like to have a covenant with you. We want to be on your side. We want to buy stock in Isaac because Isaac's stock is always going up. So, we never killed you. We never stole anything from you, sort of. So, you know, let's make a covenant. So he made them a feast. He didn't say he's making a covenant. He said, feast. They ate, they drank, they got up in the morning. They made oaths to each other. It doesn't say that he made a covenant. The Rashbam claims that when Avraham made a covenant, it was a terrible thing to make a covenant. He gave away the Philistine lands, and that's why we always had trouble with Philistia, trouble with Gaza, trouble with the Philistines, Goliath. We always had trouble because Abraham gave away the land. And right after he gave that away, he made a covenant, a breach with the Philistines. The next thing was he was punished through the binding of Isaac. That's the Rashbam's view. Yitzchak doesn't make that mistake. When Yitzchak is told, let's make a covenant, so let's eat, let's drink. Yeah, they made some commitments. They swore something to each other. But it's more like he gave them, Avraham gave them cattle and everything. He just made them a feast. He was a little more clever in dealing with the locals. He wasn't as forthright to say, oh, we're going to make a covenant. Really? You're going to give away the land that's covenanted to you from God to other people? So Avraham may have made a mistake. Yitzchak is a little more savvy. And he makes it look like he's part of the deal. He makes a feast and he gives them something to drink. Everybody's happy, but it's not clear that he makes the same covenant. It doesn't say Ve'echotush Ne'embrit. They made a covenant, like it says with Avraham. So maybe he was better at diplomacy, although before we said maybe he wasn't as good. He wasn't as eloquent and it didn't sound as good. Now, when we say that he was blind to Esav, you know why he was blind? He was blind because he couldn't see how bad Esav was, or God didn't want him to see how bad Esav was. Well, it's not really true. He was not blind to Esav's ills. They grieved Isaac and Rebekah's spirits. The two wives that Esav had taken, two wives, they grieved Isaac and Rebekah. They were monogamous. His son was polygamous with Hittites, who the whole story of Isaac, if Esav knew anything about the story of Isaac, it's that his father sent a messenger far away to get non-Hittite, non-Canaanite wives. He marries the Hittites. So he wasn't blind to the fact that Esav had gone against the family tradition, the family story. If they ever told the story, then Esav knew he was going against the family story. He was not blind to this story. Now, the Netziv, as I mentioned, has a broader theory about what Yitzchak was trying to do to bless this son. Let me share this. We see that Yitzchak did not give the blessing of Abraham to whoever was standing in front of him. Only when he knew it was Jacob, he gave it to Jacob. And we don't need to understand, just because he's not sure when he's going to die, he had to bless him. Why didn't he bless him before? What's going on? So he says as follows.
Did you say that he knew that it was Jacob?
No, when he wasn't sure who it was, he didn't give him the blessing of Abraham. When he knew it was Jacob, he gave him the blessing of Abraham.
No,
he reserved the blessing of Abraham to when he knew exactly who he was talking to. And also, what's his business? He says, I might die. What do you mean? Let's say you won't die. You could bless your children anyway. Why does he need to have a meal before he gives the blessing? So he says, look, he knew that Yaakov would get the blessing of Abraham. And how do you get that blessing? Through Torah and worship. And he got through kindness and all that. But, he says as follows, generally what they say from the Netziv is as follows, that he says, that Esav was appropriate for the ways of the world. And he thought that Esav would be someone who could do the ways of the world. And then Yaakov would do things that were more of the other world. And that's what he was trying to do, that he was trying to give the worldly matters to good old Esav and the heavenly matters to Yaakov. And it didn't work out. But he was not a fool. He was not trying to give everything to one person. Okay. Now, Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam, says as follows. If we look at the blessing, what happened? He tricked him. And then Yaakov tricked Yitzchak. And then Esav says, what are we going to do? So Yitzchak says, I'm sorry. He stole your blessing. He'll be blessed anyway. He'll be blessed anyway. Why? He stole it. He doesn't deserve it. So he says, even if I wasn't really sure who I was blessing, so the blessing shouldn't count. But I want the blessing to be as if I did know what I was saying. I chose you because I thought God wanted you, Esav. Now that I see that it worked out that God didn't want you, I'm not giving it to you. I'm not giving it to you. So he was very willing to go with God's will. Whatever God's will was his wife. He stuck with his wife. God's will that it would be Yaakov, even if he liked Esav better, whatever God's will is. So it also speaks highly of Yitzchak in some ways. Okay. And as we said, he gave the real blessing, the blessing of Abraham to Yaakov. Okay. Now, the Maharal says as follows. There's a wonderful Gemara in Shabbos that reads like this, says the Maharal. The Maharal explains it. Yeshua Nachmani said, Rabbi Yonatan says, what is the meaning of this? You are our father, for Abraham knows us not, Israel does not acknowledge us. You, Lord, are our father. What do you mean? The future will surely come. Holy One, blessed be He, will say to Abraham, your children have sinned against me. And Abraham will say, God, look, master of the universe, let them be eradicated to sanctify your name. Here's what killed them. So God says, let me talk to Yaakov. So since he's experienced the pain of raising children, he'll understand. He'll ask for mercy. He says, Yaakov, your children have sinned. The Jews have sinned. So Jacob says, look, if they've sinned, then kill them. Let them be eradicated, and they'll sanctify your name. So God says, nobody understands anything. The old man, Avram, he doesn't understand anything. The younger people, Yaakov, he doesn't get it. So let me talk to Isaac. So he says, your children have sinned. So Isaac said, master of the universe, are they my children or not your children? As long as when they said they will do and they will listen, you called them my son, my firstborn. Now that they have sinned, they are all of a sudden, they're my children. So it's Yitzchak who defends him. So let's take a look at the Maharal. How does he explain this Gemara? Why was Yitzchak better at defending the Jews than anybody else? So he says, I don't understand. He says, Lama lo Avraham and Yaakov? Why didn't Avraham and Yaakov save the Jews? And why was only Yitzchak? So some people say that since Yitzchak really is the judge, his characteristic is judgment. So if they could win from his perspective, then they would really win. So he says, what they're trying to show is that the Jews have to stick with God. And Shem Avdil Marchi Yisrael mentioned about Gam Kein Mitzad Mida Yitzchak that Adin Kasher Yered La Omek Adin Yesh La Medzchut. When you really get down to the essence of the judgment, which Yitzchak represents, harshness, the essence of the judgment, the Jews will be okay. The Jews will be okay. So, so if you can save the Jews from the judgment perspective, then you're really in good shape. So it's really Yitzchak who, even from a judgmental perspective, can save them. That's the biggest salvation. So what that exactly means is sort of a mystical kind of concept. But the main thing for us is that this Gemara claims that somehow, in some way, Yitzchak is better for the Jews. You know, you always ask, you know, who's good for the Jews? In some ways, it's Yitzchak. In what way? It's interesting. Now, Rashi says that not only because he's a holy offering, he can't leave Israel. Rashi says something else that people don't often quote, that he couldn't marry a concubine. He says, why did he wait 20 years? He waited till he had children. Finally, starts praying. What, 20 years? So he says, Shivcha lo ratzal isha. He did not want to marry a concubine. He became holy. He was on the altar. How can someone who's on the altar marry a concubine? So he couldn't marry a maidservant. Maidservants are at the level of a slave. You can't be married when you're fully Jewish. You can't marry someone like that. So he couldn't marry a concubine. So as he's the only one who doesn't marry a concubine, Avraham was married to Hagar. Yaakov had Bilhah and Zilpah. Yitzchak is too holy to marry a concubine. He's better than some of the other forefathers in that way. Now, there is a problem that we could ask from an offense point of view, that God appeared to him and he said, look, I'm the God of Avraham, your father. Don't worry, I'm with you. I'll bless you. I'll bless your children. Well, many children. For the sake of Abraham, my servant. Abraham, my servant. Why not for your sake? Why doesn't God say to Yitzchak, I'll save your children because of you? After all, God says he would save Sodom because Avraham is so good. But it could be when you speak directly to a righteous person, you don't tell them you're righteous, except for Noah. But really righteous people, you don't tell them that. David Zvihafen says he had already proven himself his whole life. Abraham was already dead. So that's it. He's proven from day one to the last day of his life, he's holy. But you have time to go. You have to stay the course. Then we'll talk about your merit. After he died, then there was merit. But before that, he hadn't reached the level of a patriarch before he died. So, but it is interesting that he blesses Yitzchak for Abraham. He built an altar in the name of God. He said, when he got a prophecy, he called out the name of God. And he only started calling out the name of God. The first time he had the prophecy, he didn't call out the name of God. But then when he realized second time he was called into prophecy, he became more interested in this.
He was a prophet.
Yes. Now, the forefathers were prophets. Now, just a few final thoughts about defensive of, number one, I have a good friend, Rabbi David Sykes, and he wrote a wonderful book about Genesis. And in it, he claimed, based on the Zohar and other books, that Yitzchak is Gan Eden. Who represents Gan Eden? Yitzchak. We know that Yitzchak, I talked about it last week. We know that Yitzchak smelled the Garden of Eden on his son's garment. We know that Yitzchak, what else? He lived in Israel only because Israel is the Garden of Eden. And finally, his wife was ashamed of him. She fell off the camel. She covered her face because Adam and Eve were ashamed of each other. He lives in the Garden of Eden. He never leaves the garden. Also, right? Whereas the others do. Also, he is continuity, right? He is the one who continues, and it's nothing to sneeze at. Hashem Yishmuel says the opposite. He says, the Hasidic Rebbe from the beginning of the 20th century, he is the Koach HaChidush. He is the renewal. When Avraham was almost dead, he renews our spirit. Comes up, just like in the winter, it looks like everything's dead, and it comes back. Yitzchak represents Nisan, spring. He's the beginning of Israel because he's the first of the second. In other words, Abraham was just one guy. Who knows what it'll be? Yitzchak was the beginning of the idea of Israel, of a nation, of a family. And therefore, he had the Koach HaChidush, which was something new. He is the land of Israel, right? He's the first land of Israel guy. He's all about Israel. And he's an Ola Tamima. We said many times that he was on the altar. And then there's an interesting question. We know that there are some missing years. After the binding of Isaac, he seems to disappear. During those years when he disappeared, he wasn't at his mother's funeral. He wasn't there when they built and they bought the tomb of the patriarch. He wasn't there when they found him a wife. Where was he? Was he with the angels in the Be'er Lachayroi, the place where Hagar had seen angels? Or was he hanging out with Ishmael, who was no good influence? Did he, after the binding of Isaac, did he have a falling and a falling out? Or did he go to a new level, like the rabbis would imagine, that he became an offering of God? So it's very interesting. But the idea that he's an offering of God, Rabbi Ezra Bix points out that he's, no, I'm sorry, there's another author, modern author, who said, pointed out that he's very tamim. He barely realizes where Abraham is taking him. Where are you going, Dad? And he kind of goes along with it. And then when Esav feeds him a game, he buys into it. He's maybe he's a good boy. He's very tamim. And if that's how Yaakov is known to be, ish tam, be a simple, pure, almost innocent kind of person, Yitzchak has tremendous innocence. Rivka can't bear to tell him, I'm sorry, honey, your favorite son is really no good, because he's so tamim, he's so pure. And when he realizes that he was wrong, he says, what can I do? I love my son. I wanted to give him all the blessings. Nothing I can do about it. He's so tamim. God says no, no is no. That's it. So I think we've shown that Yitzchak, firstly, he did a lot more than you think he did. And we can't give short shrift to those stories. The stories of the digging, the wells, it's not a small thing. It means that he established himself in Israel. He continued the way of things that happened before. God does appear to him twice. He's the one who blesses the land of Israel. He's blessed. He finds wells. He's blessed with his crops. He settles down roots. He names the cities. He lived the longest of all of them. He makes a covenant. The neighbors are begging him to make a covenant with him. His name was never changed. He prayed for his wife. He's the perfect continuation of his father. He didn't really like Esav better anyway. He was only trying to give Esav some of the physical parts. He's the only one who doesn't go down to Egypt or other nations. He may not have done so great with Avimelech, but later on it was good. He had tremendous success. He took the spirituality that his father found in those symbolic wells. He didn't fall for the covenant thing with the neighbors. He understood. He wasn't as foolish as we think. He understood that Esav had done the wrong thing and married the wrong people. And the ultimate blessing he always reserved for Yaakov, there was no question about that. We did find a Gemara in Shabbos 89b where Yitzchak is the real hero of the Jewish people, not anybody else. And he was so holy, he couldn't marry a concubine, he couldn't leave Israel. He is the Garden of Eden. He is the holy offering. And perhaps he's so spiritual that when his wife saw him, she was overwhelmed and she practically fell off a camel just to think about the awesomeness of this character. So in defense of Yitzchak, he really ain't so bad after all. He's not just this mamby-pamby figure, who's a transitional figure. He really is something special.